Okay, right. Thank you very much. We're starting at 12 o'clock. Boom, we're here with James Rowe. This is 60 Seconds with James Rowe. Start the clock.
Full out Anne Robinson.
Okay, best restaurant in New York?
Do you know what? It's a restaurant that doesn't exist anymore. It's a pandemic, sort of lost to the pandemic. Lucky Strike. It was in Soho. Absolutely amazing. And I had my birthday there the day before the pandemic hit.
Wow.
So I think, maybe, I'm not sure, but I think I had the last slice of chocolate cake that Lucky Strike ever served. But it's a beautiful little bistro.
I mean, James, for 60 seconds that was a fantastically indulgent answer.
Nice.
But congratulations.
I'm eating up time.
It'd be 60 minutes with.
Yeah. 60 minutes of James Rowe. Okay, most frustrating app on your phone?
Oh, Instagram. I hate it. End of scrolling.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Best campaign you've seen in the last 3 months?
Ooh. Do you know what? I really like the Mackie D's cactus flea market that came out this week from Wider New York.
Fine.
Smart.
Love that. Least favourite colour?
Yellow.
Two in a row. Mm. Favourite brand right now?
Oh, that's always a hard one. I'm going to be really self-indulgent here.
Mm-hmm.
Lionsgate Plus.
We'll find out why soon. Do I like a rat or a fish?
Ratfish.
Fair enough. Okay. That's two again. Your career in a noise. Perfect. Most embarrassing work or story of your career?
Oh, wow. So many to choose from. I was speaking to Shanley the other day about this. Early on in my career, back when we had art bags, right? And as the account man, you'd have the art bag. Got to the meeting, unzipped the art bag, had picked up the wrong art bag and was currently in a client meeting with another client's work. So not only had ruined my meeting, I'd also ruined someone else's meeting who was probably opening the Magnus cider work in like a Tesco meeting. So
That's class.
And when you're account exec or account manager, you're like, oh, fuck. So maybe not the most embarrassing, but it's the one that I can still, you know, when you can still feel.
Oh, in the stomach.
Yeah, right in the stomach.
You look in the bag and you go, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
How did you, wow. Thank you for that. That was a very...
I remedied it by reprinting it all out on the client printer before the meeting started. So,
fair
tip, get there early and then you can fix anything.
Love that. James, thank you very much. And thank you for joining us. We're going to roll straight into
this
right now. I guess I really wanted to speak to you for a number of different reasons. One, I guess it's important to say you are a version of us that we want to become in 5 years' time, in that you came from the UK, esteemed managing director, account director background at Adam and Eve DDB, and then you came over here with a suitcase and a friend and an Airbnb, and 5 years later, you've won awards with Adam and Eve DDB, you've done work for Lionsgate, we're going to talk about, and you've even won the MBA as a client, which we'd say is pretty American.
Mm.
So I want to start by saying, why did you pick New York and why did you end up here?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I'm not sure if we ever picked New York. So I think New York kind of picks you sometimes, right?
Okay.
And it's something that we, Adam and Eve, we'd always spoken about, right? The 5-6 years I was there in the UK were amazing 5 or 6 years. Mm. You know, I think at the time we were the hottest startup. Then somehow we merged with DDB and it worked. Like two very different cultures coming together. Not only did it work, we were the most successful, continue to be one of the most successful agencies in the UK. And they got to a point where there wasn't much more we could do in the UK, right?
Mm.
You conflict yourself out of various categories. We've grown to a certain size. The work product was great across most, if not all of our clients, which, you know, often the times that's one of those things where you're like, we need to do better work there. And the opportunity came up to think about expansion. And it was just about finding the right client, right? Because I think we'll go on probably to talk about more about why did it work or how could we have done it better or whatever. But I think finding the right client to set up in New York was incredibly important. Just like, you know, having John Lewis and Foster's back in the early days of Adam Eve was so important for us to get the right work out there, to get the right creative work out in market. And I think we found that in Samsung. And I remember when we were on that pitch list and you sort of look down and there's Adam and Eve. RGA, Wyden, McCann, like some big hitters, and we sort of sat there as plucky little Adam and Eve from the UK, sort of thinking, we'll give it a shot, right? Like we've got nothing to lose here. It would be really interesting to see if we could bring it in, and we did. And wow. 2 weeks later, we were here, and it was that quick, and
it was that quick,
that exciting. Yeah, yeah, I mean, so it's cool. Sort of, you know, you win it, we need to service it, and we need to lay down plans of the office, the staffing, and all this. And obviously, during that pitch process, we were talking about that in the background. So it was not a normal pitch for us, because it was really that opportunity that we had been looking for. Mm. And obviously, you know, Adam and Eve in London, we have a lot of global clients as well. But being able to have a client that was based in New York, you know, Samsung were based in Washington Street, which is just opposite the Standard. So they have a base there and one in New Jersey. And it was a real sort of landmark, and it gave us a real sense of gravity. It gave us a real focus, rather than the alternative, which is like set up shop and like open the doors and be like, come on in. There's nothing inside yet, but there will be. And I think that would have been a harder sell.
Do you think you still would have done or the move? Could that have still happened without Samsung?
I'm sure it could have. And I think it would have looked a lot different.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of the things that we believe at Adam and Eve is to sort of let the work do the talking. And I think when you've got a client like Samsung, really demanding, but really high standards and constantly making work, is that you get to prove yourself quite quickly, one way or the other, right? Mm. And, you know, in the first 12 months, it was, let's make sure we can, like, stay here longer than 12 months.
Were they a client in the UK and then they invited you to pitch from the US work, or like, how did it?
Not at the time, no. We knew the CMO, Mark Machu, from his days at Unilever. I used to run part of Unilever when I was at Adam and Eve in London. And he had been he'd taken up the CMO role there, Samsung.
Cool.
And that's how we sort of got our way onto that list.
How did you localize yourself quickly? Because I think that's the biggest, the thing you hear a lot of, you know, UK agencies coming over here, and we'll come onto that as well.
Yeah.
How did you quickly localize yourself and go, right, that's what they're going to want to see?
Yeah. It's not a quick process. And I think anyone that tells you otherwise is lying. but what I think it was a shock to me how different it is. And I think that's probably one of those things that isn't talked about enough. I think in the UK, we look at the US as our, you know, great strategic partner in all things, political and otherwise, maybe not so much now. But I think because American culture is so prevalent in the UK, we kind of go, yes, same, same. But actually, when you come over here, you realize there are quite a lot of differences culturally, politically and otherwise, in business and in advertising. And I think we sort of came over here thinking one thing and quite quickly had to reappraise that.
What was the biggest difference?
Look, I think from a cultural point of view, and specifically cultural point of view within advertising, America is used to buying and selling, right? Mm. It's there. It's in the work. It's so clear. I always, like, the analogy I give is, like, in America, it's a straight road from A to B. And in the UK, we sort of dance around and romance someone and sort of, you know, it, very much in that sort of the John Lewis mold of tell them a beautiful story and integrate the product and the brand message into it. I feel like in the US, you know, the heart of capitalism is very much like, tell me what you want me to buy.
Right.
Like, don't sugarcoat it. Tell me what you want me to buy. And I think the work you get in the US as a result is a lot more direct. I think comedy is used as a way to make that entertaining. But ultimately, you know, you look at some of the all-time great sort of advertising devices here, whether it's, you know, the Geico Gecko or Flow from Progressive, and they are people that are selling you stuff. And I think we came over going, you know, we'll do a John Lewis here.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure a John Lewis would have been possible in the US at that time. I don't think a John Lewis had ever been created out of the US. I think it was kind of a thing that could only have happened in the UK, because a UK audience allows you that time to tell them a story, lull them in, tell them a message, and then, you know, almost reveal at the end. In the US, it's a lot more transactional than that. Yeah. And I think that is a cultural piece that filters right down into the business of advertising. And I remember one specific night, Stu, who's our head of strategy, and I, who As you mentioned, we came over here. We sort of knew each other a little bit in the London office, but we hadn't worked together too much. But all of a sudden, we were living together in an Airbnb as we set up Adam and Eve in New York, and
with shared beds,
separate bedrooms. But we turned on the TV, right? And first of all, you're bombarded with advertising all the time.
Yeah.
And second of all, every second ad is a food ad, and every third ad is a pharma ad.
Yes.
And it's incessant, and it's an assault on the senses. And like that was part of, I guess, our US onboarding, if you like, is literally you sit there and watch a game of NFL and take in the ads, and very quickly it feels so different to watching the Premier League on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
And I think it comes down to that. It's way more transactional between the brand and the consumer. And once you realize that and you embrace it, then you can have fun with it.
Right.
It took a little while to go, okay, this is how we can do it. But we also wanted to make sure that we didn't lose that Adam and Eve source as well, right? Mm. Like, it could have been very easy for us to just bring no one over from Adam and Eve London and just go like, well, it's Adam and Eve, there's the name. And underneath will sit a ton of US folk. But we wanted to keep that Adam and Eve culture, the Adam and Eve way of doing things. But you have to give it that local flavor as well. And we had to in part educate ourselves and in part bring in some talent from the US that had that knowledge ingrained and that culture ingrained into the way they grew up and, you know, navigated life and navigated the industry.
There are many agencies that have come over from London who have gone, we can do that, that's easy, who might have also switched on the TV and gone, well, okay, right here it's a lot more transactional, we'll make an ad where we can have some fun along the way but make sure we sell. Why didn't they make it, and why are there so many tombstones of agencies from London in the US?
Yeah, it's something we are constantly aware of at Adam and Eve, you know, like, and I think it could have been easy, given that we came over at the height of our powers almost, to assume that we would come in here and, you know, it would all be fine.
Mm.
But we were so careful about how we came over here, how we grew. And I think it comes down to being humble and not assuming and not being arrogant and going, this is going to work because it works. Yeah. Works over there.
Yeah.
We won Cannes Agency of the Year twice in the last 5 years. Of course it's going to work.
Yeah.
There is a confidence to what we do, but hopefully not an arrogance to what we do.
Yeah.
And staying humble and always looking over our shoulder and always looking at the industry and always looking who else is out there.
Mm.
And I think another reason is that I think we stay true to the values of Adam and Eve as well, right? You know, Rick Brim, who's our group CCO, you all know him.
Yeah, yeah.
Zero ego. Mm. And that is so important to us because we always say the best ideas can come from anywhere and they're formed when we sit around a table all together, whether you're an intern, a producer, a creative director, a CCO, whatever. And we lived that quite literally in the early days of Adam and Eve in New York. And it was some of us around a table. I should show you a picture of our first meeting room. It is cobbled together with trestle tables and whatever else and a conference phone in the middle in the days where you had a conference phone. And it literally was 10, then 15, then 20, then 30 of us around that table figuring it out. And there was no ego. There was no, big name on the door. Mm. It was all of us. Because it's another thing we say, but it's been so true. All of us are stronger than one of us, right? Mm. Like it's all about the collective. And I think we stay true to that. And I think when you do that, it becomes easier because you're sharing the problems together. You're sharing the highs, the lows, the wins, the losses. And again, it's all about trying to stay humble and staying true to who we were as a brand and as a business.
Yeah. What do you think has changed the most about you? So you come from London, obviously now 5 years in New York. From a like personal perspective, but also from a work perspective, what do you think the biggest changes have been so far?
Oh, wow. Is this therapy session?
Yeah, man.
Wait for the next question.
Why did you murder those three people in there?
Yeah. You told me we wouldn't speak about that. Strike that. You can redact that from the record. What's changed the most? Wow. You should probably ask my wife, who was my girlfriend and is now my wife. So that's one thing that's changed.
Okay.
But I think I think I'm probably a lot more measured than I was in the UK, right? Like coming from Adam and Eve, when we were, you know, working, one week we're working with David Becker, the next week we're working with Wes Anderson. You know, when you then land in a foreign land, that, you know, it kind of knocks you down a peg or two. And you really have to work hard to build that back up. So I think I've become a lot, I think, you can ask my team, but I think I've become a lot more measured, perhaps level-headed. And I think you have to be, you know, anyone who gets more senior in this industry, I think has to, but certainly jumping out of a market that you know, that you've grown up in, and landing in somewhere that you don't necessarily know, even though you speak the same language. I think that's a common thing, right? Like, it's the US, speak the same language. Yeah. We've all watched Friends. It's going to be fine. But it takes time to figure that out, and it's a very humbling experience. Yeah.
How have you found the difference in, like, selling work? Is that completely different to the UK?
I don't think it's completely different. I think there is an art to selling work. There's an art to buying work as well as a client. And I think at Adam and Eve, we don't have a set way of doing it every single time. I think it's dependent on the work. It's dependent on the client. It's dependent on the day of the week, the meeting room, the, you know, the time of day, like all of that changes. So I don't think it was more difficult or less difficult, but I think we had to think about the situation. We had to think about the cultural context of the work that we were presenting, that often in the UK is secondhand.
Yeah.
And in the US, you kind of have to work at. Over the last 5 years, I've become an NFL fan.
Yeah. Right?
Like, because that's part of the fabric of society here. It's part, like, Saturday is college football, Sunday is NFL. And if you don't know that, and if you don't seep yourself in that, then you can potentially miss out on opportunities. You can miss out on cultural context. And I'm using sport as one example, but it's right. Huge. It's true right the way through US culture.
That's a really good point. I was going to ask about, when was the point where you brought in a local to kind of give you first-hand insight into, like, the cultural nuance of the area that you're working and living in?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we were thinking about, or as we were building the office and building the team there, I think we wanted to find that balance between people that knew Adam and Eve. That was really important to us. That, again, that DNA, that sense of not having an ego, that the collective is stronger than the individual, that had to be key, because otherwise it wouldn't have been Adam and Eve. Mm. It would just be the name on the door, and the DNA and the personality of it wouldn't exist. So, you know, myself, Stu, Kimmy, who's our head of project management, and a few others were kind of like first out. But we also knew, and it became increasingly obvious to me, that we needed US talent.
Yeah.
And I guess the first big hire we made was David and Daniel from BBH or ECDs. And that was transformational, right? Like, it really was. Not least because it meant we had creatives on the ground rather than our creative department being in London, which, you know, as we were transitioning onto the business, there was our creative department was in London, and we moved it over into the US. That was transformational because they would see things and understand things that we couldn't possibly understand. So that was huge. And I think it reminded us of the importance, again, of knowing where we were, right? This, you know, you're not in Kansas anymore. It's you're here, and you need to be respectful of that. It's you know, a real honor to launch anything into the world.
Yeah.
It's a greater honor to launch something like Adam and Eve, and you have to treat that with the respect it deserves, and also treat this market with the respect it deserves as well. Like, it's New York. It's where this industry started. And you know, I think that was critical in understanding that and respecting that and bringing in the right talent to help us grow the next chapter of Adam and Eve. But making sure it was Adam and Eve, like, it had to have that DNA. And I think Dave and Daniel were a great example of that. And I remember the first time I met Dave and Daniel, it was at the Ear Inn, which is probably about as close to like a British pub in Soho that you get. Maybe someone would challenge me on that, but it's still somewhere we go as an agency today. Actually, we were there on Thursday, and I had a beer with Dave and Daniel, and we just talked for hours about work and what work they liked, what they didn't like, how they wanted to work. And very quickly it was clear to me and Rick at the time that, you know, they had that sort of DNA
I want to hear about a small fuck up in the time of you being here, because it sounds like it's been a wonderful journey of successes.
Small or large?
Depends how. The larger, the better.
I will tell you, we had a pitch meeting for a large retailer, and it sounds so stupid. We accidentally, someone hit the thermostat, and it went all the way up to about as hot as it could get. And this is like a summer's day, and we couldn't fix it. And we had one good meeting room, and we had to make the decision, right? Are we going to do it in the good meeting room that is pretty much a sauna, or in another meeting room that doesn't look quite as good? And we decided to do it in the hot room. And I think the only way I can describe as not winning that pitch is we sweat them out. Like we, like
oh my God.
It was, and was people were dripping that. With sweat. We were just kept on bringing water and thinking that would help. And the team did, I tell you what, the team did a brilliant job. We had boards around the room and the work I think was great, but I'm pretty sure no one could concentrate because it was so hot. Again, it's one of those things you remember like it was yesterday.
Jeez.
That is a small thing that
had a catastrophic effect.
Yeah, it has a large effect. But we're now in a new building that doesn't have a thermostat attached to the wall.
I'd say it's colder actually. We were there before. It was relatively cold. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the PTSD then coming through the temperature control.
Yeah, exactly. But that's just one of those things where you're like, it's you look back at it now. And it's funny.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was quite funny as well when everyone was dripping sweat. But if we weren't here, it probably wouldn't be as funny.
Is there a moment that's made you be like, wow, okay, I belong here. I'm feeling like I'm really, I've settled in. And
do you know what? It's funny when you often travel back to the UK now and again, whether it's for weddings like this summer, being the summer of love where everyone's got married following COVID. And it's weird. And Mum, I'm sorry, but when I land into JFK and I sort of, you see that skyline, that feels like home. And it's really, I don't know when it happened, but it happened. And, you know, in casual conversation, when you talk about going home, it feels that I'm referring to New York.
Wow. Do you think we'll be here forever?
I think so.
What's kept you?
I think the industry here is fast-paced and always changing and always moving, and that's really exciting. I think there is tons of opportunity in the US, not that there isn't in the UK, but there is more of it here. And I think the people, like New York in particular, is a melting pot of some of the industry's best and brightest, and it's great to be working alongside of them, competing against some of them. So you know, sort of never say never. But there, New York is like an addictive drug. That's the only way I can describe it to people. Nice. It's like it feels like you're hooked in, and it's nonstop, and it's brilliant. It's exciting. It's an adrenaline hit every single day.
Yeah, we get a lot of people asking us in the UK, you know, for roles to come over here, and it's like, oh yeah, let me know if anything comes up for a British creative director to join an agency. Mm. We've not had that brief, and I actually kind of don't want that brief for a while, because again, similar to you, it's like I don't want to be the British recruitment company that come over here and say, oh, have you hired a Brit? That's not what we came here to do.
Yeah.
But if you were a British managing director, creative director, or someone from strategy, whatever, what would advice would you give to them if they were trying to break into the New York market?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It goes back to that point around like arrogance I was talking about earlier and being humble. Like I think when you're in another market, whether it be the UK or, you know, in London or Amsterdam, I think there can be the perception that that's the center of the world. It's certainly the center of your world, right?
Yeah.
And you sort of, you know, I grew up in the industry in London, and you're sort of like, well, have you not seen my work for Tesco Mobile? And people are like, what the hell is Tesco Mobile? Like, you know, and even when you sort of come over here and sort of say John Lewis to some clients, they'll be like, what? You know, and so I think getting smart on the market here. I think also, you know, specific things, working on global pieces of business and demonstrating that you can create work that does work in other markets, or that you can think differently and think about different cultures and different ways of thinking. You know, I think it's really hard to break through here if you've worked on just UK brands at UK level, or, you know, or let's call them local brands if you want. Not because that work isn't good. There's some amazing local work in the UK, you know, whether it's for the likes of three or you know, wherever it might be. But I think it's difficult for US agencies to necessarily go, okay, well, I can see how that would translate here, or I can understand how that would work. I also think, you know, it's a cliche to say, but everything's bigger in America and the budgets are bigger, the marketing plans are bigger. And so I think quite often clients and agencies want to see evidence of you have being able to have managed, if you're on the account side or strategy side, something of that scale. And sometimes that's not available in those local markets. So being able to expose yourself to those sort of bigger, perhaps global briefs or regional briefs, but ultimately learning the market. You know, I think being able to walk into an interview and speak confidently about what's going on here in the US is the thing that's going to get people talking. And, you know, this is a people business ultimately, and being able to have those conversations and connections can only really happen if you put yourself in this market.
That global element, I totally understand, actually. It might be the reason why we do see a lot of agencies fail, because they don't they're just so focused on local work in the UK and not necessarily haven't. And because that is some of the most creative work in the UK already.
Yeah.
But when it gets to more global work, it goes up a level, doesn't it? It's kind of, there are more layers. It's the idea gets squeezed, all of that stuff. So
you wanted to ask the thing about the Cannes thing as well. I mean, before you came along here, James, we remembered a conversation that we had.
Always worries me when someone says awards. The Cannes thing.
Scam awards.
Well, no.
What makes a scam award? That's what I'm curious about. But like, we don't have to go into that yet.
I think we can go into the scam award.
Cool. It's a pet peeve of mine as well, right? Like, there's nothing more frustrating when you look at a piece of work and you're like, was that real? And I like to try and give work and agencies and people the benefit of the doubt. I thought we were getting better at it. And then I looked at the work this year and I was like, have we completely got rid of it? Like, I think a lot of the things that are getting awarded are undoubtedly creative. And I'm not taking away from that one bit, because there are some amazing ideas out there. But I think as an industry, we need to be awarding things that are having the type of impact that's changing business, having business impact or behavioral impact. And I'm not always sure that we are doing that. Even in some of the categories that, you know, aren't the effectiveness categories. Like, surely we should be awarding work that is effective. That's what we're here to do. We're here to sell, to get people changing their behavior, buying more, you know, subscribing more, whatever it might be. Surely that has to be part of anything that we're awarding. And I think, unfortunately, that's maybe been lost a little bit along the way. So I don't know what makes up a scam ad or like a, you know, something that maybe isn't honest in its intentions. But I think we should place more emphasis on, did it really work? What did it do? Because there is some beautiful work out there, don't get me wrong. A lot of the stuff that we saw this year, I think, I'm like, yeah, it made me jealous, but did it do the business? Was it work that truly worked? And I think that's one thing that we really concentrate on.
Have you got a good example of where it's all of those things, where it has a good meaning behind it? Is it also a really, really good idea?
And it really
worked?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about some of our work just because I know it. And two very different pieces of work. I think I won't talk loads about John Lewis because everyone knows about John Lewis in the UK, but that is a great example of work that really works. And I think we're really proud of that creatively, but I think we're just as proud of that from an effectiveness standpoint and the return it gives to the business. That's where the magic really is. Closer to home and closer to what we've done, our work that we did for Samsung for their QLED TVs, was really successful in terms of actually selling TVs, right? And that sounds stupid to say, but it was. And we, you know, people will know it probably, if they know it at all, from the work we did with Ryan Reynolds and the collab between Netflix and Aviation Gin and Samsung, what was called an ad within an ad within an ad. But it sold a terrific amount of TVs, like a lot. And that was the bit that got us most excited in many ways, because it's not just work, but it's work that works. And I think that has to be the center of what we do as a business and what we do as an industry. And I think when we distract ourselves from that, we denigrate the value of the industry for our clients. And I think if we start awarding the stuff that's not working, then it just becomes a sort of a mire of great, inspiring, creative stuff. But that's not what we're here for. Mm. We're here to sell and create behavior change. And I think we just, again, sometimes need to remind ourselves of that.
I think you mentioned Ryan Reynolds as well. It feels like he's done that in such a brilliantly artistic way at the same time. How did you convince a man that has his own ad agency to then work with you guys to do an ad with him?
I think this was maybe just around about the same time as Maximum Effort was starting to happen. So it was just before that. This was, I think, 2019 now.
Hey, you weren't the catalyst for Maximum Effort, were you?
No. I will not.
James Shore, everyone.
Legally, I am stating that that's not true. Just before I get a cease and desist. It was a really interesting brief from Samsung, and we'd created this platform around being made for the biggest premieres, which is around their super big screen TVs. They had a partnership with Netflix, and we looked at all the movies that were coming out, and Six Underground was one that sort of leapt to the top. Ryan Reynolds and Michael Bay directed, so it was a big, it was a big blockbuster. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to think of a way to bring that to life, that partnership to life, in an interesting way. And we're like, well, Ryan's got aviation, like, he does some interesting stuff. Like, maybe there's a way we can bring aviation into the equation, give him something to take away, and give Samsung something to take away, and give Netflix something to take away. And we managed to kind of, with Samsung and Netflix, broker that partnership for that campaign. And it was one of those things that just fell into place quite nicely. It took a lot of, that sounds, people are going to, at the agency, be like, it didn't fall into place quite nicely. It took a lot of work. And it did take a lot of work, but, it died 1,700 times before it eventually got made. But it was worth it.
I'm hearing, again, like, thinking about the buying and selling thing, you've looked at that and gone, right, okay, what are they going to get out of this? And what are they, it's like a cluster of return for everyone that's involved.
It's just a value exchange, right? Like, that is what we're doing as advertisers, ultimately. It's the value exchange. What am I going to give you in order to get something back? And particularly when we work with brands and partners, that has to be central to the partnership strategy. What do you get? What do I get? How does that benefit us as brands? How does that benefit our businesses? How does that benefit the consumer? And you're right, like, it was just like a little sort of triangle of love.
Woo! off the back of the Summer of Love.
I like that little whoop. That was very American.
Thank you. I'm learning. It's really, how was the whoop, guys? Was that okay?
Pumped up.
Okay, I want to ask you an honest question.
The rest of them haven't been honest.
No. You've lied about everything else. Right, okay. You're not getting this one past me. What are you still shit at?
It's a great question. Probably a lot of things. I'll tell you what. I know that I am still learning every single day. And so there's probably a lot of things I'm bad at. Pick out one for you. It's a really simple one, one that I always tell my team, like, just be on top of your to-do list. And my to-do list, like, is constantly I've moved it to digital, right? I used to write it all down. I was like, no, we're gonna, and it's just an absolute cluster of notes. And I should get better at, like, sitting down at the end of the day and just tidying that bad boy up, because it's can get unruly. So that's a very simple one that I probably need to get better
at. Just day-to-day efficiency. You strike me as someone that will just are you aware of what Parkinson's law is?
Yeah.
You strike me as someone that might kind of just swell into the more that you take on.
Yes.
And where do you think that comes from?
If I could answer that, I'd probably be a lot more sort of relaxed and stress-free. But I think we're just, over my time at Adam and Eve and even before, just so ambitious, right? And just wanting more and more and more and more, and never being happy with our lot. You know, even when we were sort of winning awards left, right, and centre. We're like, when's the next? What's the next thing? What's the next thing? How can we be better? How can we do better? And I think that's also, I think, part of our success here is not, you know, when we won Samsung, it wasn't right. Like, let's shut up shop. Yeah. It was, let's bed that in for 12 months and then spread our wings. And, you know, we went on a bit of a run of Jim Beam and Facebook and having that kind of restlessness. So I don't know. I couldn't tell you where it comes from.
Well, where does that stop then? This is the question that Sam was chatting about before, I guess. But what would be champagne, holy shit, we did it moment for Adam and Eve, DDB New York?
Yeah. It's I think for us, and I don't know how my UK colleagues will feel about this, but being able to be at least level pegging, if not more well regarded than our UK agency is or was.
Mm.
That could mean Cannes Agency of the Year or Ad Age of the Year, whatever that means. But I think being able to stand shoulder to shoulder with an agency as sort of respected and storied as that is, I think that's when I'd probably, you know, have earned a day off. But yeah, you know,
more weddings for you next summer then, mate.
Yeah. But I think that's it's an incredibly sort of nearsighted goal in many ways, like you're comparing yourself to yourself in many senses. But I think because of the success we've had, it's a good one for us.
What needs that? I think it's a bigger, America is bigger, as you're saying, it's a bigger task, arguably, because it is a bigger island.
Mm-hmm.
Geographically, yeah. I think. But what needs to happen commercially to be weighed up as successful as London?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's commercially, to be honest. I think if it was commercially, that would be one thing, and that would be great. I think it's more from a creative standpoint and from a respect standpoint in many ways, right? Like, are we respected creatively? Are we seen as that creative powerhouse? And I think we are doing some brilliant work. I want to do more, you know? And I think we're doing it on some brilliantly big and ambitious brands, whether that's Samsung or Molson Coors or NBA 2K. Like, those aren't small brands. We're not sat here talking about, you know, a foot cream brand. These are huge US brands. So I don't think it's necessarily about size, and I certainly don't think about it from a commercial perspective only. There is that piece to it, don't get me wrong. That's a large part of my job. I shouldn't ignore that. But I think for us, success is creative success. It's being awarded for the work we're doing. It's being respected. It's being the place that people clamber over to be at because the work is special and people can see it. And it's an enjoyable place to work at. Like, I always say to people, I got into this industry because I enjoy it, right? I enjoy the thrill of cracking a challenge creatively for a client. And we've tried to build an agency that other people can have that feeling and that enjoyment into. Otherwise, we might as well just go work in a bank, right? Like, we can work fewer hours if we were lawyers or bankers or whatever, right? And earn probably more money. But why do we do it? Because I think we're this breed of people that love that challenge. We love the thrill of the challenge. And we just tried to make an agency, and we have made an agency in the UK. And I think we are there and building and evolving in the US that people enjoy that thrill and that challenge.
Yeah.
I wanna get to understand, I guess, a bit about the stuff that you're scared of a little bit. Is there anything that drives, I hear this restlessness kind of energy to you, to Adam and Eve New York. Is there anything that you're scared of as a business?
I don't think we're scared of something. Like, I don't think there's a thing out there that we're scared of and we're going, oh, we would never do that, or that thing's scary. I think the thing that I have been perpetually scared of since being here is failure. Is you know, to your point, you know, the graveyard of UK agencies, the graveyard of agencies full stop in this market is large. That has been, you know, the tail between your legs moment is something that sits at the back of my head, of flying back over and being like, no, we've shut up shop. That is, I think, actually, going back to your question, why are you so restless? It's that. It's the fear of that.
Wow.
And that's personally what drives me. I don't think it's something we're scared of as an agency.
No.
But I'd be lying if it wasn't, you know, right there in my periphery or the back of my mind. I don't know why. That's probably pride and other things in there. But that's the thing that, you know, I'm just always checking myself on.
Yeah.
And I think that just fuels our kind of drive and ambition.
Nice.
Amazing.
Industry-wide, I want to ask you some questions around kind of this weird, wonderful world that is New York Adland. Are there any myths that you want to bust from Brits coming over here being like, oh yeah, I've heard it's really X, but it turns out it's not? I'll start you off.
Yeah.
A lot of British creative people that have done mainly British creative brand advertising say that the work here is too salesy. We've covered that. That's a lot of conversations we've already spoken about. And again, it's not true, because when you're here and you compare that against what really is salesy work, that is the hearing aid that's being sold to me three times already since being here, ad after ad in between the...
I want to see what your search history is, that if you're getting sold that ads like again and again and again.
But is there any myths that you're like, it's just not true, but you wouldn't have known until you've been here?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like the industry since I've been here has changed so much, and, you know, we've had the small matter of a pandemic in between it. Is there a myth? I don't know. I think there's probably a perception that it can be really hard work, you know, American business and, you know, the heart of capitalism in the world. And there is certainly that piece to it, right? You know, there's some of the biggest brands in the world here. But I think there's also loads of opportunities to do smaller, more intimate niche pieces in America as well. So, you know, we were talking earlier about the smaller, more local brands. There are plenty of those here as well. I think there's a perception of, you know, it's the home of McDonald's and Nike, and it is. But there's also so many interesting small entrepreneurial brands and founders and marketeers, and I think there's plenty of opportunity there as well. It's not just the kind of, you know, the things you see in the movies and the things you see every day on your Instagram feed.
What pisses you off about this industry?
Fads, trends, innovation. It kills me. Like, you know, the amount of times we get asked, or I see out there, you know, metaverse things and trends like that, and it really annoys me. And it annoys me for a couple of reasons. One, because I think it's a time suck for a lot of people, like an unnecessary time suck for a lot of people. And secondly, because, and this is like a very much a kind of Doyle Dane Burnback, Keith Reinhardt piece around like the unchanging man. And like, I deeply believe that as a human race, we haven't really changed that much ever. Like the things that like the emotions that we feel and the things that make us tick, whether it's love, hate, fear, haven't really changed. Like, those are basal things that we experience. And I think those, when you tap into those, that's when the most powerful work happens. So when we spend all our time having to think about or swat up on the metaverse, which we can talk about later, or fads or trends. And I think the word fads and trends, like trends is used when you want to sort of over-intellectualize a fad. Mm. And don't get me wrong, there's a place for keeping your sort of pulse on culture and things like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like the industry's constant obsession with the next thing.
Mm.
When we haven't even done the thing we're meant to be doing well sometimes, back to our conversation around fake work and, you know, making work that sells and things like that. I think it's just an obsession and a distraction to keep people employed sometimes, you know, like, why, let's focus on the thing we're meant to be good at.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we're going to earn respect in the industry, I think, as individual agencies, but also making sure, whether you're a creative agency or a media agency, you're respected by our clients.
Mm.
Right. So that's the thing that annoys me most, when I see like another trend fad presentation.
Popular one, actually, at the moment. We're hearing a lot about this anti-trend thing. I want to introduce you to a man called Wilkinson, who is my 9-year-old little brother. You've not seen him. He's on the floor. He is invisible.
You've had a 9-year-old and you call him a man.
Yeah. That's what I mean. There's a lot of expectation on this
parenting.
Man. I'm using him as a human to learn, coming into this wonderful world of creativity. Mm-hmm. Let's fast forward his life a little bit. Let's get him to 21 years old. So now he is a man.
Got it. Yeah.
Where would you go if you were creative, relatively articulate, and driven and hardworking, mm-hmm. as a 21-year-old man, woman, or whatever you are right now?
Great question. I think there's probably more opportunity than there's ever been, right? Like we now live in a world where it's not, if you want to make work, you don't just go to a creative agency. And I think there are plenty of great creative agencies out there, whether it's Adam and Eve, whether it's, I think, Mischief are doing some great work. I think our friends over at Alma in Miami are doing some really interesting work. Like they are part of the DDP Latina network and they're deeply in touch with the Hispanic community. And I think in a country where for the first time ever, there will be more Hispanic people than ever before in the population, like they've got their businesses built around that community and those people. And I think they're doing some really interesting work as a result of it. But that's not it anymore, right? There's those creative agencies, but they're great opportunities in-house. I have my own thoughts on that, but I think there's plenty of opportunity there. I think there's plenty of opportunity for people to do their own thing as well. Like, and you look at creator channels, whether it's, you know, TikTok or others, where there's a real sort of democratized canvas for you to express creativity. I don't think you have to then sign up to an agency, a brand to do that.
Do you think we'll lose people? Do you think there'll be a drought of people coming into the advertising industry because of the democratized commerciality of creativity? Now, that's a lengthy question.
Put your smart hat on, haven't you?
Jesus.
It's wow, let me just been waiting for that. Is that on the iPad? Wank my, waiting yeah, to say
that one wasn't written down.
Okay, let me just... To 21-year-old.
I'll de-wank that for us. do we think because of the more options there are for creatives, the ad industry might lose the talent?
I think it's probably one of the things that as an industry... we need to maybe not fix, because I don't think it's a problem yet, but we need to guard against. And I think we need to remember what our superpowers are. I think our superpowers as an industry, and certainly Adam and Eve, is really truly believing that a great idea can come from anywhere, whether you're a 30-year veteran CCO or you're a 2-year grad, right? Like there's plenty of opportunity there. And I think the one thing that agencies have as well is variety of opportunity. And my sort of one caution against in-housing is that you're working for that brand, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think it's what we have as agencies, the opportunity to one morning be working on a launch of a shoe and the next morning be working on, you know, something completely different. I don't know, launching a microwave. I don't know why I said microwave, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I think that variety is really beneficial when you're learning. Back to your 21-year-old son, brother, man, or whatever you're talking
Wilkinson.
You know, I think what agencies really do offer is that variety and that breadth of opportunity. You're working on loads of different brands, whether it's, you know, Twix to Nike to McDonald's to Jim Beam to Facebook. Like, there's so much wealth of opportunity there that you don't necessarily get elsewhere. And I think, and this is one thing that, you know, as we've come back to the office and things like that, I've been reminded of, is sort of learning by osmosis, you know, just being around creative people, seeing how they sell, seeing how to construct a presentation. You know, it's one thing to have a great idea, it's another one to sell it. And I think agencies are still brilliant at doing that. The best ones are. And I think if we're to retain talent, if we're to bring talent in, we need to be good at selling that to talent, right? There's so many, you know, it's been well documented, the sort of talent leaving the industry for tech giants and things like that. But I think we are still where creativity happens, where creativity is born, where creativity thrives, when we're at our best.
Less scammiest.
Less scammiest, yeah.
All right, I want to make sure I give you a chance to kind of bring something into the room, your room 101 moment. I know we've already covered scam. We've already covered not metaverse, because I know you're not saying that it has its place, but you're definitely saying fads and that kind of stuff. Is there anything else that you, if you could get rid of it?
I'm going to double down on the metaverse.
Please go on.
I think it is currently the biggest sham and fad in the industry, and it drives me insane. And I think it's, I don't think I'm alone. Actually, I know I'm not alone. James Whatley, thank you for all the work that you've done on that. He's done some great presentations on it, which is debunking the myth of the metaverse, you know? And I think it's really funny. You sort of know a trend or a fad when all the work is the first X in the Y, the first thing in the metaverse, right? And I feel like we've just got through that tranche of work that's been the first bowling alley in the metaverse, the first retail space, the first agency in the metaverse. I want to see how that agency's doing in the metaverse, because it's not really a thing, is it?
Quite lonely, just looking around. Going,
yeah,
this is a shithole.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Where is everyone? Oh, they're not here. So it annoys me, because I think I think innovation is great, and I think it's really important that we continue to evolve and we continue to challenge ourselves. But the obsession with the new and the shiny infuriates me, and I think the metaverse is taking that crown at the moment.
I want to flip it.
Yeah,
what good can come from the metaverse?
Good can come from the metaverse. You heard it here first. I'm sure there is something we can take and learn, and maybe I'll be sat here, or I won't be sat here, I'll be sat in the metaverse in 5 years time, ruining the time I sort of said the metaverse would die. But I think there's things we can literally learn from the metaverse in terms of, you know, technology and innovation and collaboration, and there's some interesting themes in what the metaverse purports to be. None of it is real yet. Like, you know, you think back, I sadly watched that kind of keynote speech from Zuckerberg when he was doing it all in the metaverse. But that wasn't the metaverse. That was just a really sort of slick, strange presentation. That sort of people went, oh, that's the metaverse. No, that's not the metaverse. That's just a way of presenting work.
Yeah.
So I think there's maybe things around sort of technology and using it for collaboration, particularly in a sort of borderless world and things like that. You know, as we've gone through the pandemic, I think people were craving for something that maybe gave them a bit of that. I think we can also learn what not to do when the next one of these things comes around, and all sort of jump onto it like it's this giant bandwagon, that if we're not on it, that we maybe lose
left
out
behind.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it comes down to confidence in who you are as a business and what we are as an industry, like chasing off this next thing. I saw that I think it was Argos in the UK this week launched the first ad campaign that was in the real world and in the metaverse, and like the daily users on that thing are like five people looking at it,
and that was someone's nan going, what the fuck am I on here, how's that happened?
Totally. And I'm sure there's some great work that Argos are doing, don't get me wrong, but that I just sort of look at it and go, I thought we were past this. And again, it's a lot of time, a lot of resource, and I feel like that could be better deployed as an industry in terms of doing things that matter, that sell product, that build brands. And again, innovation, great. Not against innovation.
Do you find that your clients ask for those, or can you get us to do something which would be cool in the metaverse or something like that? And how do you manage that?
Yeah, you know, sometimes those questions come in. Sometimes we ask those questions of ourselves as well. Like, you know, I didn't see the word metaverse or watch that presentation or read about what was going on and go, ugh, this is terrible, straight up. But you sort of have to educate yourself and educate the agency and educate the people you're working with first before we can then go and purport to, you know, sell that to a client or be an expert on it or whatever else. And can anyone truly be an expert on the metaverse? Maybe, but that's like, you know, I could be an expert of anything in a year's time.
Yeah. There's playful elements to it. I do have empathy a lot for the CMOs that are kind of going, I don't want to get fired if I don't try this thing.
Totally. Like,
can you guys do one of those things so I can tell my CEO or my partners and shareholders that we tried the metaverse, it didn't work?
Yeah, but I think, and this is true of anything we do, is asking the why. Can I have a metaverse thing? Why? What are we trying to do here? What business challenge are we trying to solve? And there may be a really good reason that we're trying to, that the metaverse may be the answer. I'm not saying it may be. But we have to ask ourselves the question of why. And then we have to ask ourselves the question of why? Why should it be the metaverse? And why is there not another answer that might be out there? And I think, you know, a lot of times the metaverse and gaming get mixed up. You know, Animal Crossing, Roblox, Fortnite, those are not the metaverse. Yeah. And I think, again, we need to just be clear on what we're doing and why we're doing it. Mm-hmm. Is it about an audience thing? If it's about an audience thing, yes, they may be in the metaverse. They may be elsewhere. So I think, yes, we do get, you know, we've had those conversations. We have presented NFT ideas. Don't get me wrong. Like we're not Judas. Immune to it. But it was actually, we ended up doing an anti-NFT idea. But
perfect.
Which is maybe like my personal sort of hatred for those. It's
a deliberately bad NFT idea.
Yeah. I told you that shit. Look how bad this is.
Exactly. But you've just got to ask yourself the question why. And you have to we have to educate ourselves on that technology and make sure we understand it before we're then jumping on recommending it to our clients. Like, otherwise it's more sham salesman, you know?
Yeah,
totally. I want to say thank you very much, by the way, because you've given us a lot here. Before I let you go, I just want to give you a small 2-minute soundbite of a story. That is actually the most embarrassing thing that you've witnessed in the last 6 months. It can be anything. It could be personal. It could be professional.
The most embarrassing thing that I have witnessed in the last 6 months.
Or created.
Oh, my God. There's a theme here with you two, sort of just fishing for embarrassing stories. I don't know. It's a good question. It's a hard question.
It's an annoying question.
I don't know what I would say. I'm trying to think myself. What would I actually say?
This may be a cop out and maybe just be related to the last 5 minutes of conversation we had. But I think there's been, and it's going to be very generic. So it's a bit of a cop out.
Okay.
But I think there's been tons of people that have stood up on stage, purporting to be experts on things like the metaverse, and not understanding them. And as an industry, when we do that, it makes me cringe so hard because I think it's clear to a lot of us and it must be clear to our clients and it must be clear to our partners. And, you know, people standing up being, we do this, that, and the other in the metaverse, or we're doing, you know, it just hurts me to witness that. And look, maybe it's me. Maybe I don't understand it and I'm the fool. And that, you know, again, the embarrassing moment that we'll talk about next time that we chat will be this
moment little bit.
When we are in the unknown metaverse office.
Oh, yeah. Well, so here we are, James, you liar.
But
no, I get that. Thank you. That's I put you on the spot there. Well, mate, thank you so much.
My pleasure. This is nice, isn't it?
I've loved this. We should stay here forever.
Well, one thing I will mention. Before we finish, we're talking about, you know, when we came over here, Adam and Eve, is this about being humble and not being arrogant and things like that? Adam and Eve is not only an advertising agency in the US. Actually, the Adam and Eve that most people know is the sex toy shop. And we didn't know that when we came over here.
Really?
Yeah. It is
that is amazing. We've got to open with that line. Surely.
It's really...
That's exceptional.
We had no idea until someone came into our office looking for a refund. And this is not a lie. This is year one.
No.
Yeah, asking for a refund. And we obviously were like, sorry, I think you've got...
Are you but, Samsung? Sorry,
but it goes to show you, right? Like, it goes to show you this thing about being humble. It's like, no one knows what Adam and Eve is.
Yeah.
And wow. And so that's one of those things that I always find funny is like, you know, you have to work hard to establish yourselves in a new market.
Yeah.
And now what we do, and this is a plug, but now in some of our new branding, we say, ooh, not the adult toy store around
beautiful,
here.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Because honestly, like when you ask 9 times out of 10, when you say you work for Adam and Eve, they're like, oh, how do you?
Can I get a butt plug?
In immigration, it's like, oh, yeah. So that was a learning moment for us.
Fair
when
enough.
When someone's asking you for a refund on their latest purchase.
That's amazing.
Well, James Rowe, thank you so much. This has been incredible.
My pleasure, chaps. Really, thank you very much. This. Best of luck with the New York adventure yourselves.
Thank you so much. Au revoir. Thank you.